So let's begin.
Is the document given in the morning in Chartreuse just the same or at or Chartreuse and doing the document
on the state tune to the email today? Keep you on your toes. It'll be in code. That's easier. That's only the code, right? That's right. An emergency channel. All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is daf Chof Aleph. We are going to begin on Chof Amud Beis. So if you remember, again, we left off. We actually left off a little bit up. We left off Minayin LaKohen Gadol. 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara says, Minayin LaKohen Gadol Shemeis Velomino Achar Tachtov. How do we know that in the event that the Kohen Gadol died, and let's say they did not go ahead and appoint a new Kohen Gadol in his stead yet, meaning let's say, whatever the Metzias is, let's say you'd have a reason where for some reason there was not a standing Kohen Gadol. So we know that Kohen Gadol's special Mincha offering still had to be offered. So the Gemara suggests now, how do we know that we would take the funds, we would get the funds for that carbon from the Yershim, from the inheritors of the Kohen Gadol? Tamal Omer mi banav. So the Torah says that ultimately from his children you will do it. So the Gemara says, Yachol Yivi Ena Lechatzayim. So we'll say, as we pointed out yesterday, if you remember, the Kohen Gadol's Mincha was split up into two parts. And remember, we saw the Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon and Lakish in terms of how you sanctify it. Do you sanctify it all at once in the morning and then divide it up into two parts, or do you sanctify as needed? But everyone agreed that at the end of the day, you would offer it up in two parts, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. So now the Gemara says, you might have thought that you would do the same thing even in the absence of the Kohen Gadol. Talmud Lomar Osa, Kula Amarti Div Rav Yehuda. So also therefore the Torah says, you will offer it. The only time you split it up is when there's an acting Kohen Gadol. But if there's no acting Kohen Gadol, you offer it all up at once. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Eino Ba'a Ela Mishal Tzibur. Rabbi Shimon says, no. Going back to the original point, if there's no Kohen Gadol, we don't get the funds for this special mincha from his yarshin, from his inheritors. Rather, it comes from communal funds. Shne'emar, Chok Olam. Because the Torah says, ultimately, the Torah uses the phrase, Chok Olam. We translate that as an everlasting statute. But interestingly enough, we'll see the way the Gemara understands it. Chak Olam Mimi Shabris Krusa Lo. The Chak Olam comes literally from the one whose covenant is eternal. Now, I'll say, take a look at the Karban Aida. So the Karban Aida is on the right hand side of the page, towards the end of the Karban Aida, the last couple of lines. Mibris O Mimi Shabris Shalo. Mimi Shaha Olam Shalo. The Kasal Kadait Kadahainu Mitrumas Halishka, Shekvar Hikdish Hatzibor Lashamayim. So, we'll say, interestingly enough, the way the Gemara's understanding is the following. Torah says, Chak Olam, it'll be an everlasting statute. So, the Gemara is saying that the money for the carbon comes from that which is eternal. What is that which is eternal? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, what does that mean? The money comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The money comes from monies that were pledged to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which refers again to the communal funds of Trumas HaLishka. Okay, so the Gemara goes back to the Gemara, says, Kalil Taktar. So the Gemara says, you shall go ahead and, literally, Kalil Taktar means that you'll offer it up and it'll be totally burnt. So the Gemara says, Kalil Lahaktara. We learn from here that the entirety of this offering is burnt. Look at the Karban Aida again. Kalil Lahaktara. Shelo Ya'asu Mimenu Shiraim La'akhila. The Torah says, as opposed to other types of minachos, where there is, you know, we know, for example, by the classic mincha, only a kamitza is offered up and the rest is consumed. When it comes to the mincha of the Kohen Gadol, there is no shiraim. There's nothing left over. There's nothing to be consumed. Everything is burnt. Fine. Kohen Gadol Shemes, says the Gemara, Rabbi Ba Bar Mamal Boy. He asked the following kasha, Michlefa Shitasid Reb Shimon. It would appear that the position of Reb Shimon is switched around. Why? Taman Amar Mishal Yarshim, Bahacha Amar Mishal Tzibor. So we'll say, interestingly enough, in our Mishnah, so we'll say this again, the case of the Kohen Gadol died, there's not yet another appointed Kohen Gadol. The Kohanic Mincha, the Kohen Gadol Mincha has to be offered, and the Shaila is what? Who picks up the bill? So the Gemara says, it seems to be we have Rabbi Shimon contradicting himself. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says the money comes from the heirs of the deceased Kohen Gadol, and yet later on it says, in another Mishnah it says that it comes from the Yarshin, and here it says it comes from the Tzibor. Amreb Chia Bar Ba Tapal Chaf Aleph Velo Yeyosu Makshe. This is a good kasha. Asa Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha Rabbi Yavo Bushim Rabbi Yochanan Devar Torah Hu Shehu Ba Shetehe Ba Min HaTzibor. So the Gemara answers, really, the halacha is that midva oraisa, it should come from communal funds. It should come from communal funds. So the Gemara says, we will say skip the parentheses and go to the words after the parentheses. Hayisi omer yigvula. So I might have thought that halacha lemaisa, they should collect it from there. So what that means is, I might have thought that once it's coming from communal funds, they should do a special collection for it. Meaning, we'll say, go back to what we just said before. Now that we're using the drush of Chak Olam teaches us that it has to come from communal funds. So I might have thought that what does communal funds mean? We should do a special appeal for the mincha of the Kohen Gadol. Let's do a special appeal. So the Gemara says, no. Ha'ayisi omer yigvula, hiskinu, skipped around parentheses again, hiskinu shetehe ba'a mitrumas halishka. The rabbis instituted that we do not need to do a special appeal, but rather, again, we take these monies from the general fund. Rabbi Yosef Amar Rabbi Yochanan, boy, mahu shleima b'shachres u'shleima bin arba'im, o shleima b'shachres u'betela bin arba'im. So we'll say now, here's what we know. We know that before we said that although when the Kohen Gadol himself offers this mincha offering, he splits it up, and he does half in the morning, half in the afternoon. Now, what happens when he's offering it up in his absence? So do we offer it now? We just said before that we don't split it up. So what does that mean? Does that mean that we just offer it all up in the morning and nothing's done in the afternoon? Or does it mean that we offer a whole one in the morning and a whole one in the afternoon? So the Gemara says, Kate pshitale dichsiv minchas tomid. So we'll say, the Gemara says, well, it would appear to me that the answer to that is quite simple, because the Torah itself says it should be a minchas tomid, which means, I'll say now, tomid over here means morning and evening, and therefore it would appear that in the absence of the Kohen Gadol, we in fact bring a whole mincha, both in the morning as well as in the evening. Okay, shloshes lugin mahin. So on one hand, what else do we do about the shloshes lugin? I will say, remember, there are three lugin of oil that are brought along with the mincha of the Kohen Gadol. So we'll say, now we're just trying to figure out the mechanics of it. How is it brought? So when you talk about these three lugin, mahin, shloshes lugin shachrish, shloshes lugin bein arbayim, do we bring three lug in the morning and three lug in the afternoon? O lug umechtza shachris, u lug umechtza bein arbayim, do we bring 1.5 lugin in the morning and 1.5 lugin in the afternoon? Amrevi chizkia, uf hada tzrichale. So the Gemara says, uf hada tzrichale means this is also a good kasha. Right? Uf hada tzrichale. This is also, meaning, now that you're asking this, let me bring in another question. What's the other question? Shnei kuntzin mahin. Now we'll say, along with the Kohen Gadol's mincha, there's also kmitzin. Right? There are also these handfuls of, not well called handfuls, of Lavona. So what do you do about the kmitzin of Lavona? So the Gemara says, Shnei kumtzin b'shachres, shnei kumtzin bein ha'arbayim. Do you go ahead and bring two kmitzos in the morning and two kmitzos in the afternoon? O kometz achas shachres for kometz achas bein ha'arbayim. Or do you simply bring one kometz in the morning and one kometz in the afternoon? Amar Rav Yosa, klum lamdu l'kometz, lo b'minchas chotei. Have we not learned out the concept of kometz from the mincha, from the sinner's mincha? Remember, we've spoken about this earlier, that there is a circumstance in which a person who normally would be liable to a chatos will bring a mincha. In cases of poverty, where a person can't afford a regular animal for a chatos, they can bring a korban mincha. So we'll say, so that becomes the paradigm for menachos. Ma lahalon shnei kumsin, af kan shnei kumsin, just like over there, we bring two kmitzos with every offering. So to over here, we'll bring two kmitzos as well. Skip the parentheses. Amar Reb Chizkia. I'm sorry, don't skip the parentheses. Ma taman tzrichale, afacha tzrichale. Just like over there, it's a good kasha. So to over here, it's a good kasha. Amar Reb Chizkia. Chlum lomdu shloshes lugin lomi tamid shalbein harbayim. Have we not learned out the three lug from tamid shalbein harbayim? Ma lahalon shloshes lugin. Just like over there, you require three lugin by every offering. Afkan shloshes lugin. So to over here, lugin. Uma taman tzrichale. Afkan tzrichale. And just like over there was a kasha, here too it was a kasha. So Rabbi said, what seems to come out from this sugya is that halacha lemaisa, number one, This is all in the absence of the Kohen Gadol. In the absence of the Kohen Gadol, we will offer a complete Asiris Ha'efa in the morning and a complete Mincha in the afternoon. In the absence of the Kohen Gadol, we will go ahead and do 1.5 lugin of oil in the morning, 1.5 lugin of oil in the afternoon. When it comes to the kamitzos, it would appear that we'll do 2 kamitzos with each Karban Mincha. Okay, so it says the Gemara. Shlo yiyah. So we'll say, if you remember again, one of the enactments that the Mishnah spoke about was that the ashes of the Para Aduma will not be subject to Me'ila. If you remember again, the Lashon over there was Va'ala Para Shlo yiyu Mo'alim Be'afra. Now I will say, actually, let me rephrase that. The way the Mishnah reads is that when it comes to the Para Aduma, that people should not commit Me'ila with its ashes. Now, obviously, what does that mean? So the Gemara says, Rav Shimon ben Nachman, b'shem Rabbi Yonasan. Bedinhu, meaning logically, bedinhu, sheyima'alu bahen. So we'll say, it would have appeared logical that the ashes of the Para Aduma would go ahead and be subject to Me'ila. Subject to Me'ila. Take a look at the Karban Ha'eda for just a moment. The Karban Ha'eda says, Bedin hu she'im ma'alu be'efer para elish and tonight bezin hu she'im ma'alim ba'afra. So we'll say, logically, we would have said that the ashes of the Para Aduma are in fact subject to the prohibition of Me'ila. Remember, Me'ila just means inappropriate use of consecrated property. So the ashes of the Para Aduma should be no different than any other sacrificial item that is subject to the laws of Me'ila. V'heim gazru shelo yima'alu ba. But the rabbis went ahead and made a tonight. We'll say, now again, remember, when it comes to certain consecrated items, the rabbis have the right to regulate the levels of consecration. So the rabbis made a tanai, essentially a condition, that the ashes themselves of Parah Aduma are not consecrated. Okay, so Gemara says, 1 second, Bahatani chatos, ay. But the Torah uses the Lashon of chatos by Parah Aduma. And whenever the Torah uses the Lashon of chatos, we learn from that, melamed shemo'alin ba. We learn that you go ahead, and it is subject to Mila, because we'll say again, essentially what chatos says is that this is a sacrificial item. Once it's a sacrificial item, it is subject to all the laws of Me'ila, to which the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you how to darshan that. But Mo'alim, no, what it means is the para itself is subject to the laws of Me'ila. Ve'in Mo'alim ba'afra, but its ashes are not subject to Me'ila. So I'll say, so the question, of course, is what's happening over here? So listen to this. I'm Rabbi Avoh, Barishona, Hayu Mishtak Shikin Ba. In the beginning, they were mishtash kishin ba. Now, what does that mean? Take again a look at the Karban Ha'eda. I don't want to play favorites in Tiklin Chanatin or the Karban Ha'eda, but I've taken an affinity to the Karban Ha'eda. Also, because he's just much easier, because he's right by the Gemara. Now, if you notice that, meaning he's right by the side, as opposed to the Tiklin Chanatin, which is always on a different part of the page, he's right here. So, I'm not weighing in on this, I'm not, but I'm just saying. Look at the Karban Ha'eda. So, take a look over here. He says, you see in the Karban Ha'eda, he says mishtak kishin ba ba'afra hayu misrapin v'nosnin osa agabi mako sehen de'efer merapin maka. So also it's very interesting. So what used to happen, people would take the ashes on a Para Aduma and they would use it to go ahead and use it like as a dressing for wounds. Apparently, again, has some type of medicinal purposes as well. So people are using the ashes. I will say, obviously, this is secondary ashes, because the real ashes are the Para Aduma. Of course, I used to the Para Aduma, and those were a very significant commodity. This must have been some leftover ash from something else involved with the Para Aduma. So people would go ahead and use it for medicinal purposes. So what happens? The rabbi stepped in, and the rabbi said that, they didn't like this, because again, remember, the concern over here is what? That if they're using this now, what's going to happen? They may end up actively using other parts of the Para Aduma as well for inappropriate purposes, and therefore the rabbis were goes there that you can't do it, because if you do it, you're going to be in violation of Me'ila, of inappropriate use of consecrated properties. But of course, again, remember the structure over here. Midda Oraisa, can you use the ashes of the Para Aduma? Midda Oraisa, yes. Why? Because the laws of Me'ila only apply ba. only applied to the parah itself and not to the ashes. Now the Gemara is saying the rabbis were goes that it is such a meal. Now the Gemara is explaining why. In the beginning, people used to use the ashes for their own personal reasons. Again, which Rabbi said technically is fine. When it became so widespread, Chazal became concerned that people may end up using other parts of the parah. So what happens? They made a takana. This is very interesting. Kevan shegazru, excuse me, because of Shema Alaba, Kevan shenigzru, I'm sorry, because of Shema Alaba, Kevan shenigzru, Gazru shelo yima aluba. I will say, literally translated, what this means is, and then once there goes there goes that there should be no meila. Now, what does that mean? Look at the carbon eighth again. Kevin shegazru, kevin shenigzru, upershu misafek hazos imnitmu bisafek tomasames, lo hayu mazin alav shelo yima aluba. So, what is very interesting. So, now what ended up happening was two things. So, two ways you could read this Gemara. Number one, the way you could read this Gemara is that their gezira worked. People stopped using the ash, and therefore the rabbis took their gezeira off, meaning the gezeira was there to make people treat the parah with greater sanctity. It worked. So there was no need to keep it on the books if it worked. The Karban Eidah says something different. The Karban Eidah says what ended up happening, once they made the parah aduma subject to Me'ila, then there was, people stopped using parah aduma. Now what does Me'ila say? If you think about this for just a moment, If you go ahead, a parah aduma is sanctified. So let's say now a person is not sure, did I come in contact with tumah, did I not come in contact with tumah? So we normally say, okay, just be sprinkled by the ash of the parah aduma out of safek. Here's the problem. If the parah aduma is subject to the laws of Me'ila, if you are not tumah and you get sprinkled by the ashes, then what? You have engaged in an act of Me'ila. So what ended up happening, says the Karban Eidah, people essentially were in a state of safek tumah, did nothing to rectify their circumstances. So such a fascinating idea. So on one hand, Chazal's desire to go ahead and rectify people's inappropriate use of the ash, or what they felt to be potential inappropriate use of the ash, actually had another negative unintended consequence, that people stopped using the parah aduma altogether. So what ended up happening? So Chazal felt they had to repeal their takana, because the truth is, even if people end up using the ash, remember, that's not real me'ila. So we don't want people using the ash, but better to have people potentially do something that we don't like so much, but is not halachically problematic, than to go ahead and what? Make a gzera that's going to prevent people from using the parah altogether. That's why the Mishnah says, they originally said that lamaisa would be subject to the me'ila, and then they repealed the rabbinic me'ila prohibition to put it back to where it was, and therefore encourage people to do parah aduma properly. So more goes by Deval Akinu. So we'll see if you remember again, the Mishnah spoke about the idea, actually machlokas, of what happens in the bird offerings. Let's say it turns out that, remember, one of the offerings was invalid. So the shayla is now they had to replace it, because remember again, somebody contributed money towards a proper bird carbon. So what do you do in the event that the carbon itself is invalid? So we have the machlokas in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi says, the Tanakhama said, that it comes from Mishal Tzibor. Communal funds replace the pusil bird. And Rabbi Yossi says, who does it come from? It comes from the bird supplier. It comes from the guy who ultimately had the bird contract with the Beis HaMikdash. He agreed to go ahead and make up for any losses. So says the Gemara, Ba'ala Kinin. So also we actually had this Gemara 2 days ago. Ha'isha Hazos B'mahi Miskapas. Also, if you remember again this case, this was the case of the money that was found Mechza al Mechza, between the Kenan and the Olos, between the Chatas bird offerings and between the Ola bird offerings. So what did we do if it's Mechza Mechza? Remember, where does it go? Mechza Mechza between the Kenan and the Olos?
Olos.
Good. Goes to the Olos. Why? You could have texted that into me. So it goes to the Olos. It goes to the Olos. Why? Because the Olos are more chamer. Because remember, again, the Olos ultimately are totally consumed on the Mizbeach. Remember, the Gemara there asked, that's very nice, but what do you do about the fact? Now, remember, I will say, we don't know, that doesn't tell us that the money is actually from the Olos pot. All it tells us is that we have a doubt. And when we have a doubt, especially when it comes to biblical items, we resolve it stringently. That's all it tells us. But what happens if the money was originally from what? Was really from the chatos. Meaning, let's say again, a woman was there that day, she had a baby, or she was a zava, and she had to bring the chatos bird offering, and she put money in there, and now her carbon is not going to be offered. So someone says, what do you do about that? That's the thing we're saying over here. Ha'isha hazos, this woman, meaning let's say we have to entertain the possibility that the money found mechza mechza does in fact belong to the chatas pot. So ha'isha hazos b'mahi miskaperes. What is she going to do? How is she going to be atoned? I'm Rabbi Yitzchok tonight. Based in who? Hamasapik es akinen who masapik es papsulos the es haavudos. So Rabbi Yitzchok says no, because it was part of the condition of the person who supplied the birds. That Rabbi say whenever there was a psul, meaning Rabbi say means let's say whenever they shechted one of the birds and it turns out the bird was a treif or something, or ovdos, or when something was lost. For example, the case of where the coin of mechza, that's a case of being lost. In all of those cases, the person who undertook, the person who had the contract for the birds, would undertake replacement of all these kinds of items. That's how he answered that gemara over there. So the gemara said, in that case of mechza, as much as the money is going to go into the ola pot, but we are going to go to the bird supplier and ask him for another pair of chatas birds to offer them up just in case. So we'll say, since that's how the gemara paskins, that at the end of the day, in these kind of cases where something happened to one of the bird offerings, either it was lost or it was puzzled, the person who had the bird contract was responsible for all replacements. Hadron Allah, Moz Shinimtsu. Mishnah. Kol harokin hanimtsan biyushayim tohorin. I will say, in general, if you find saliva, so I'll say, understand that these halachos sound a little bit strange to us because we're not nishar, we're not careful with the laws of ritual purity of Tum and Tara. But obviously, in days of Mesomish of Tum and Tara, a person had to be vigilant of everything. So what happens? So a person goes ahead and finds saliva, or a person comes in contact with saliva. So the Gemara says that any saliva found in Yushalayim is considered to be tar. Chutz Mishal Shukha Elyon, Rabbi Meir, with the exception of saliva found in the upper marketplace. So we'll discuss exactly what it is that means. Take a look at Moshe at the Karmana Eidah for just a moment. On the left hand side, Kalarokinam Tavishalim Taurin, Velombach Zikin Luhu, Beroko Shalzab. So we'll say, what's the concern? The concern is there are certain types of tumor that can be conveyed through saliva. So, which we'll say is just a very interesting idea. You know, that if let's say, it could be a very interesting idea in terms of transmission of tuma. So if let's say again, if you have the saliva of a zav, so that can literally convey tumas zivos. See, he says shehein metamin adin lekelim mishum da'azlinar basa ruba. So we'll say what the Mishnah is saying is we make an assumption that the majority of people in Yerushalayim are tahar. Now, why do we make that assumption? Why do we know? Do we say it about Tel Aviv or anywhere else? And the answer is no. Why do we say it about Yerushalayim? Because of proximity to the Beis Hamikdash. That's what we assume. Majority of people in Yerushalayim are therefore tahorin. Therefore, any saliva that's found, we go after the rov, and therefore again tahorin. We'll discuss about the upper marketplace in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi says, "Bishar kol yimos hashana." During the rest of the year, and I will say we will see. During the rest of the year means during the not during the regalim. That's what it means. During the non-regalim part of the year, b'shar kol yimos hashana sheba emtza tmein. If you find saliva in the middle of the road, then tmein. That saliva is tamei. Shebet studin. If you find saliva on the side of the road, tahorin. Then it's tar. U'b'shas haregel. Which I will say. Look at the carbon eidah again. Sheba emtza tmein. Mishum dezavin dezavos shchichi. U'mahalchem be'emtza hadrachim. V'atahorim mistalkin litzidi hadrachim. Makom shein drisas haregel matzui. U'masirin l'chol tamei shlo yiga bohen. So also listen to this. So apparently the way it used to work says, Rabbi Yossi is the following. During the non-regalim times, so there'd be a lot of people tmeim. And in fact, it could even be a large number. And the tmeim, they could walk wherever they want. So what would they do? They would often walk in the middle of the road. And what would happen? The people who were tahorin, they would go by the sides. They would stay off to the side so as to avoid tuma. And they would tell the tamei people, please stay away from me because ultimately I'm tahar. So therefore, again, any saliva found in the middle of the road during the regular part of the year is considered to be tamei. On the sides of the road is tahar. U'b'shas haregel, but during the regalim, shebe emtza tahorin. If you find spittle in the middle of the road, if you find saliva in the middle of the road, then what? Then it's tahar. Shebe tzadin tmein. But on the sides, why are both saying? Because during the regalim, who's the dominant force? The tahorin. So the tahorin get to walk in the middle of the street, and the tmeim, they are relegated to the sides of the road. Mipnei shehamiutin mistalkin litzdadin. Because generally, the people are in the minority. I would travel by the side of the road. So we'll say again, so whereas Rabbi Meir holds that Yerushalayim is always considered to be in a state of Rov Tara, Rabbi Yossi says not true. The Rov Tara status is only implied during regalim, or is only assumed during regalim, but during the rest of the year, we actually assume a rov tuma. And interesting enough, he actually assumes more of like a geographic reality. Middle of the road will be tame, side of the road will be tar. Kala kelim hanim sam Yerushalayim. Similarly, if you find utensils in Yerushalayim, so we'll say the shayla is what's the status of the kli? Is the kli considered to be tar? Is considered to be tameh? The Gemara gives a very interesting explanation. Derech yirida lebeis hatvila tameh. If you find it on the way down to the mikvah, then it's tameh. Derech aliyah. If you find it on the way up, tohorin, it's tar. Shelo ki yiridasan aliyasan. Because the way that you went down is not the way that you went up. Divi Rabbi Meir, these are the words of Rabbi Meir. So we'll say Rabbi Meir says that the mikvahs were constructed that you did not go in and out the same way. We'll say it's actually interesting. If you ever go, and now it's by the southern wall excavations, by the Kotel. So they actually unearthed a whole number of these mikvahs. And what's amazing they found with all these mikvahs is there are two sets of stairs. There are two sets of stairs. There's one in and there's one out. Also, because remember, it's not like mikvah like today. This was like assembly line mikvahs, mm-hmm. right? You took off your clothes, you went in, you went out, you came out the other side, and boom. Because remember, just think about sheer volume, sheer number of people that had to go to the mikvah prior to coming into the Beis HaMikdash. So it's like, so therefore, the Gemara is saying, if you find it on the way down, then you assume that it's tameh because it's being taken down to the mikvah. Coming up, you assume that it's already tahar. Rabbi Yossi says, kulam tahar. No, we assume that all kelim in Yerushalayim are all tahorim. Are all tahorim. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at the Karban HaEdah, he says Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kulan Tahorim Delo Gozru Al Safek Kelim Yerushalayim. Because Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that in Yerushalayim they were not gozer on Safek Kelim. That all Safek Kelim Yerushalayim are tahorim. All right, we'll see why that is. Chutz with a couple of exceptions. Min Hasal, a sal is a basket. Magrefa is a shovel, and Meritza is a hammer. Hamiyuchadin Likvaros. Why Rabbi Yossi? Because these were all utensils that were set aside, that were specifically used for either grave transfers, like moving bones from one place to another, that's the basket, or for actually digging graves. Like a shovel and hammer, we'll see the shovel was used to move dirt, the hammer was used to break apart rock. So according to Rabbi Yossi says, these kelim, if you find them, we assume they're tameh because we assume that they're used for the creation of graves. Right, Rabbi Yossi is going to take us back to our Pesachim days. Sakin shenimtseis biyudalit. Remember this? So right, let's say you find a knife on the 14th of Nisan. So we'll say the shayla is now, what's the status of the knife? So the Gemara says, shochet b'miyad. You could shecht with it immediately. Why? Because since it's Erev Pesach, and we assume that what? That people made sure that their knives are in a state of ritual purity. Okay? B'shlosha asar. But if you find it on the 13th, shana umad. You have to tovel it again before using it. Why Rabbi said, because the 13th week, some people don't yet have their kelim in a state of ritual purity. Kofitz, Rabbi said, kofitz is like a cleaver, right? All right, and I guess that's the right word for it. A cleaver. So also remember, a kofitz would not be used for Karban Pesach. Why? Because remember, kofitz was used to break apart bones. You can't break apart bones in the Karban Pesach, but kofitz could have been used for the Karban Chagigah. For the Shlamim. So the Gemara says, what happens if you find the kofitz? Whether you find the kofitz on the 13th or the 14th, you would have to tovel it again before using it, because again, there's no reason to assume that people would have prepared their kofitz for use, because King's kofitz is Pesach. Chal arbas alios b'Shabbos. What happens if the 14th falls down on Shabbos? Then Rabbi say, and now you find the knife. Shochet ba miyat. So we'll say, listen to this. Now, there's an interesting discussion as to what this is talking about. So the Karban HaEdah suggests that, again, this is talking about the kofitz. Right? That if you find the kofitz on the 14th, which is Shabbos, you can go ahead and use it for Shechita immediately. Because, again, you could assume that, even though, again, I will say you're not going to be shechting anything with the kofitz on Shabbos. Because, remember, the only thing you can do on Shabbos is the Karban Pesach itself. But it's talking about the Shlamim as well. So if you look at the last two lines of the Karban HaEdah, he says, V'yesh mefarshim, shochet b'miyad b'kofitz kamar. The afa gav de'in chagiga b'shabes mikol makom chazaka shit biluha me'erev Shabbos sur chagigas yudalit. So we'll say, so the Gemara is suggesting over here that Lamaisa, when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, we also assume that people took care of their kofitz before Shabbos as well. Amud Beis. B'tesvav, shochet b'miyad. Look at the Karban HaEdah again. And on the 15th, you could check with it immediately. And also, this is referring to the Tishakala Am Yodin Shaza Utvila Asur B'Yom Tov Umakbilin Esakome Ergam. So we'll say, if you find these items on the 15th, 15th already is Yom Tov, Remember, you could shecht on Yom Tov. So you find that on Yom Tov, we assume that everything is going to be tar by Yom Tov. Because remember, you can't go ahead and purify things on Yom Tov. Okay. Nimtzeis kshur l'sakin. What happens if you find the kofetz tied to a knife? We'll say this is all we have. This all in Pesachim. Let's say you find the kofetz tied to the knife. Harihu kisakin. The kofetz then has the same status as the knife. Meaning, since they're tied together, we assume that they were treated the same way. Rabbi Avin b'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So we'll say this. Remember, let's go back for just a moment. Remember again, the first case in the Mishnah was that in general, if you find saliva in Yerushalayim, the Rabbi Meir said that l'maisa, everything is considered to be tahor, with the exception of any kind of saliva found in the upper shuk. So what was special about the upper shuk? So the Gemara says, katzran shal nachrim hayasham. There was literally a Gentile launderer who used to live up there. And I also remember, there's a general rabbinic prohibition that the saliva of nachrim has the status of the saliva of a zav. And I will say that was done for a variety of reasons, most notably in order to maintain certain distances between Jew and Gentile. So therefore, the Gemara says that's why the Gemara singles out this upper marketplace, because let me say there was a non-Jewish launderer there. Take a look at the Karbana Eidah for just a moment. Katran shal nachrim, kobi shal nachrim, hayosham b'shuka elyon, v'chachavim gazru ala nachrim shu kizavim l'chol divrayim, v'roko tame. So that's why, again, any saliva found in the upper marketplace, one has to be concerned that it belonged to these Gentile launderers, and therefore, again, it would be tame. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, I'm sorry?
Were they the majority, though?
They must have been the majority up there. They must have been the majority up there.
If not, you'd be cooler.
Yeah, and the shuka elyon must have been the majority. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Arudos hayu nochrim b'Yerushalayim. Well, said there were what? There were. Remember, this is one specific marketplace. This is not saying upper Yush. This is one specific marketplace where they must have been the majority of people. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Chanina, arudos hayu nochrim b'Yerushalayim." They used to literally. Well, so what this literally means is they used to spear wild donkeys in Yerushalayim. Now, Rabbi said, "Why are they spearing wild donkeys?" Take a look at the Karbana Eidah again. Arudos. Arudi hayar, wild donkeys, hayunochrin litzorech arios shal melech. So I'll say what they used to do is, I guess you feed wild donkeys to lions. So what they used to do is they used to slaughter these wild donkeys in Yerushalayim to feed them to the king's lions. So what happened? Sumar says, as a result, v'hayu ole regalim mishtakin bedam ad arkavoseyem. So say, apparently there were times when they were slaughtering a lot of these donkeys and the Jewish people who were there, the ole regalim, would be walking up to their knees in blood. Right, they were slaughtering so many, and now this could be a little bit of hyperbole. What it's saying over here is that Lemaisa, everybody was getting smeared with this blood. They were slaughtering these animals all over the place. So the Ohi Regalim, who are obviously there for the regal to offer up their karbanos, were coming in contact with this wild donkey blood. So the Gemara says, so now the Shiloh was what, Rabbi Sai? The Shiloh was, what impact, if any, does this have on their personal, on their state of personal tumantara? They came before the Chachamim, below Amru Lahen Davar, and the rabbis didn't say anything to them. But Rabbi Sai, the fact that the rabbis didn't say anything to them indicates that what? That apparently coming in contact with this wild donkey blood did not pose a problem. So Gemara is going to say, why is that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, Rabbi Simon Bishim, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Maisa, but Pirda Michel Base Rebbe. There was an episode with the mule from the home of Rebbe, Shemesa, who died, Vitiharu es Dameha Mishum Nevela. And they literally said that its blood was not problematic because of Nevela. I will say, what does this mean? Now remember, we know, we actually had this a little bit earlier, but we know that Lemaisa, a Nevela carcass, has the ability to transmit tumma. The Shaila is, what about the blood of the Nevela? Is the blood of Nevela, remember we had this sugya earlier, is the blood of Nevela like Nevela itself? So the Gemara is suggesting the answer to that is no. And that's why, again, when the pilgrims were coming up, right, when the Oli Rega were coming up, and they're up to their knees in wild donkey blood, the rabbis didn't say anything. Why? Because Lemaisa, again, the blood of a Nevela does not transmit tumma. So when the donkey, when the mule of Rebbe's house dies, the blood does not transmit any level of tumma. So the Gemara says, listen to this. Sha'ol Rebbe Simon. Rabbi Eliezer, Sha'ol Rebbe Simon. So Rabbi Eliezer asked Rebbe Simon, Ad kama. Ad kama. Now we'll say Ad kama means how much blood. So now this is really just a repeat of the thing we had before. So now that we're saying is that blood of a Nevela does not transmit Nevela tumma. How much blood are we talking? Is it any amount of blood? Is it only blood up to a certain shear that doesn't convey tumah, but more than that would convey tumah? So the Gemara says, velo agive. And he didn't, Rabbi Simon didn't pay any attention to Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Sho'el le Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. He went to Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi and he asked him, Amalei ad Rabbi Yistar, Yosef mikan tameh. So Rabbi Shimon maybe said, no, the dispensation is only up to a revius of blood, but more than a revius of blood would in fact convey tumah. Because also remember, we had the shita before that up to a revius, up there once you get to revius, the revius of blood is like what is like the gizayis of an avela. Okay, ubaash the Rabbi Lezer telo chazer le Rabbi Simon shmuasa, and Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Eliezer was very upset, was very offended that Rabbi Simon didn't answer him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I asked you a question. All right, you want to tell me it's a stupid question? I'm telling you, acknowledge the fact that I asked you a question. I'll say also something very interesting, which is, as you've seen already, Yerushalmi has like a lot more of this emotion in the interchanges than Bavli does. They're Israeli. You know what I'm saying? You know, they're Israeli. So, you know, it's very interesting to see, because we've seen already this type of dynamic where people asked each other questions and this one didn't answer that one and this one got all offended. You don't really see that. They don't really see that in the Bavli. It's just very interesting. So what happens? So Rabbi Lezer, who is Rabbi Eliezer, gets very upset that Rabbi Simon didn't answer him. Rav Bivi Hava Yosef Masni Hadein Uvda. So Rav Bivi was sitting, and he was going over this particular, he was talking about this particular case. I will say this case of the mule of Rabbi that died, and they weren't the time of the blood. Amali Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna Ad Kama. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna said, until how much? Meaning, how much blood doesn't convey to him? Amar le ad revius tahar yosef mikan tameh. And he said, maybe could it be that until a revius is tahar, but more than that is tameh? Uba'at be. Rabbi said again, ba'at be means again. Rav Bibi didn't respond. So you have Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisna asking this question, and Rav Bibi doesn't respond. Amar le Rabbi Zreika, begin da'ava sha'alecha at ba'at be. So Rabbi Zreika says to Rabbi, what's your problem? Right here, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna asked you, Rabbi, a question, and why won't you answer him? I'm really begin. So what does Rabbi answer? Once again, so just to get the name straight, Rabbi is sitting relating this teaching. Rabbi Yitzchak asks him on the teaching. I understand blood does not convey nevei l'tuma. How much blood? And what happens? And Rav Bibi doesn't answer. Rav Zrika then says to Rav Bibi, essentially, what's your problem? Why aren't you answering Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisna? So what does Rav Bibi answer? Amarle, begin de lo havas datai bi. I'm not ignoring him. I'm just really not able to concentrate. Why am I not able to concentrate? Well, it's a very profound Gemara. We've had this before. To Amarab Chanin, V'hayu chayecha tuluyim mineged. So what does the Torah say? I will say this is by the Tokacha. So the Torah says, literally, your life will be suspended in front of you. Now, what does it mean, your life will be suspended in front of you? Zeh shulokeach chitin l'shana. What does this refer to? We will say this refers to someone who does not grow his own grain. And he purchases grain from a merchant, and he purchases enough for a year. So I'll say, you see, it's very different for us to think about this, because we think about it as buying food for a year. Mamish, who does? So you have to understand something, that in the agricultural society, you often bought staples for a long time. But what's the issue? The issue is, it's very nice that you're settled for a year, but what? You don't know what's going to happen afterwards. Mm-hmm. Right? What's going to happen after the year? So it's very nice now, I've secured for myself produce now. But remember, we'll say, that was the chap of land. When you had land was your security. You knew that you'd be able to hopefully produce something. If you are dependent on others for your produce, even though you're getting a year's worth of wheat right now, literally, it's a very profound statement. It's like your life is suspended. You have no surety. You have no security. Now, also remember, the pasuk goes in a progression. You will be scared night and day. What is that? We'll say this refers to someone who buys his wheat from a merchant. So we'll say, when you buy wheat from a merchant, you buy it in much smaller quantities. The notion of constantly buying your food as needed was even a more fundamental lack of security. And you will not even believe in your life. Now, what does mean you'll not believe in your life? Meaning you won't believe that you'll be able to make it through the day. That refers to someone who has to buy his daily bread from the baker. So we'll say, you see the progression. First, you begin with someone who, again, is only able to secure a year of sustenance. So that already makes me unsure. The next level of intensity is I buy in small quantities. and the greatest level of intensity, which leads to the most, the lack, the greatest lack of security in life, is someone who literally has to buy his daily bread from the baker. So the Gemara says, "Va'ana samach apaltira," and Ravidi said, "I rely on the baker." So I'll say it's very profound, because also what it's saying is, and this is, we know this to be very true, is that when a person struggles with parnasa, it impacts every aspect of their life. It's not just the pshat that, you know, I'm not making enough money or I'm struggling, and but everything else is fine. Everything else may be fine, Baruch Hashem. I have a wonderful family. I might have my health. I might have all those things. But the lack of financial security colors the way a person sees the world. So look how profound this is. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, you have to understand, I am not ignoring Rav Yitzchak Bisna. I'm not ignoring him. But you have to understand something. Even though I'm here in the Beis Medrash, my mind is very preoccupied. I'm very nervous and very distracted, because at the end of the day, my parnasa is not secure. Very profound. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, my kidom, heyed Rav Yehoshua ben Pesura. So I'll say, what's the halacha? Here's what we've established. We've established that lemaisa again. It seems to be that the blood of an avela does not transmit tumah. The only variable is what? How much? So the Gemara says, my kedom. So now what's the resolution? Hey, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Pesora, al dam nevelos shehutar. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Pesora said that dam nevelos is tar. Totally tar. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rosa, take a look. Okay, don't take a look yet. Fine. So dam nevelos shehutar. Might mahutar. Tar me lahakshir. So what does it mean that it's tar? Maybe tar means Rabbi said that it can't go ahead and make something else hukshul tumah. We know that in order for an item to be makabel tumah, the object itself has to first come in contact with a liquid. Not every liquid is makshir an item for tumah. Maybe what it means when we say that the blood of nevela is tar, that it can't make something else hukshul tumah. Ha litamos mitame. But maybe it does in fact go ahead and make something else tame. Taman tanin, we learn later on. Dam hasheretz mitame kibsoro. We learned later on that the blood of a sheretz, in fact, is able to make something tame, just like the flesh of a sheretz makes something tame. So the Gemara says, "Metame ve'ein machshir." We see from here that what it's able to convey tuma, but it cannot be machshir something to be makabel tuma. Ve'ein lanu kiyotze bo. And we have nothing else like this. Now I will say, when the Gemara says we have nothing else like this, what does it make it sound like? It makes it sound like it's only the blood of a sheretz that has the ability to convey tumah, but the blood of other things does not have the ability to convey tumah. So Mara says, no. The inlanu kiyote bo kishir tumaso. Aval damo metame kibsaro. We'll say, no. What it means is there's nothing else like sheretz where even a very small amount of blood can convey tumah. Just like we'll say, even if a sheretz itself is very small, the flesh of the sheretz conveys tumah, even if the sheretz is very small, so too the blood of a sheretz also conveys tumah in very small quantity. But lemaisa, the fact that other items, their blood does convey tumah like their flesh as well. Amar Rav Yosi, pligi ba tre amurayim. We have machlokes amurayim. Chad amar tamei, v'chad amar tar. One said that the blood of an avela is tamei, and one said that it is tar. To which the Gemara says, man da amar tar Rabbi Yehuda. The one who says that it's tamei is like Rabbi Yehuda. Uman da amar tar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Pesora. And the one who says that it's like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Pesora. Amrali Rav Avduma, and this is true because Rabbi Huda was the posek of the house of the Nasi. So also what comes out according to this, you should just know, is that Dam Nevela, still we're left with this machlokes as to whether or not Dam Nevela actually conveys tuma or not. And if it can, and if you do say it conveys tuma, then the shaila is in what shear? Is it only from a revius and above? Or is it even in the amount of a small amount like the sheretz? That's the fundamental machlokes. Well, so you should just know that lemaisa, you could see over here already. You could see over here. You could see over here that lemaisa, that dam nevelos. Is actually, that's where the Raman Paskin is, that Dam Nevelos is Tahor, up until the amount of a Revius. Once it gets to the amount of a Revius, then Aloch Lamaisa, Revius of Dam, has the status of a Kizayis of Basar, and therefore will ultimately convey Toma. Says the Gemara, Lokain Amar Rabbi Avo B'Shem Rabbi Yossi, excuse me, Kala Rokin, all of different salivas, Lokain Amar Rabbi Avo B'Shem Rabbi Yossi Ben Chanino, Lo Gazra Ala Rokin Shibushalayim, Ha itmar alei Rabbi Avin b'shem Rabbi Shimon Levi katzrin shal nachrim hayasham. So we'll say again, the Gemara is just saying over here that although the Mishnah began with the statement that all of the saliva in Yerushalayim is considered to be tahar, so the Gemara just points out over here that with the exception of Rabbi Shimon Levi said there was the marketplace like we said before, up the upper marketplace where there was the Gentile launderer. So the Gemara says b'shayimos hashana hatmei mahalchim sheep siboles. Or Shiboles, v'atahor mehalchim min atzad. We'll say during the rest of the year, so the Temein would walk, and Shiboles means in the middle of the street, and the Tahorin would walk on the side. V'atahorin mehalchim stam, v'atemein omer lehem peroshu. And what happens? And the Temein, the Tahorin would walk regularly, and what would happen? And the Temein would say, move aside. So we'll say again, what it's saying is during the regular part of the year, the Temein were the majority, therefore they walked in the middle of the road, and they were also the ones who told the Tahorin, you guys get out of the way if you don't want to become Tomei. Bishas HaRegel, in times of the Regel, HaTahorin, this is what we just read in the Mishnah. HaTahorin Mahalchim Shiboles, the Tahorin walked in the middle of the street. VaTamein Mahalchim Minatzad, and the Tamein walked on the side. VaTamein Mahalchim Stam, and the Tamein walked normally. VaTahorin Omer Lehem Peroshu, and the Tahorin are the ones who told them, move out of the way. So what the Gemara is reflecting over here is that essentially the dominant group always got to walk in the middle of the street, and it was a dominant group that would shoo away the other minority group. Thank you. So the Gemara says the following. So if you remember the man, the Mishnah said that Machlokas actually, in the Mishnah, actually not a Machlokas, the Rabbi Yossi said that when you find Kalim in your, actually was a Machlokas, if you find Kalim in Yerushalayim, what's the status of them? So Rabbi Meir wanted to suggest, if you find them going down to the Mikvah, they're Tamei, if you find them coming up from the Mikvah, they're Tahor. Rabbi Yossi said, in general, Kalim are Tahorim, with the exception of Kalim that are used for digging graves. So the Gemara says, Lo Kain Am Rabbi Avo, B'Shim Rabbi Yochanan, Lo gazru ala kelim shibushalayim, mikevan shenimtu derech yirid lebeis hatvila, naasu hochiach. So Rabbi Avo says, name Rabbi Yochanan, that with kelim, when it comes to Yerushalayim, if they were found on the way down to the mikvah, naasu hochiach. Naasu hochiach means that absolute proof that they are tamein. So we'll say again, what the Gemara is saying over here is that lemaisa, you can go ahead and accept the view that all the kelim in Yerushalayim are considered to be tahor, but you can also accept the view that what? That kelim found on the way down to the mikvah are going to be tamein. And that's not a contradiction in terms. Why is it Rabbi Osai? Because lemaisa, if you find them on the way down to the mikvah, that's a pretty good indication. That's what he calls hochiach. That is pretty good circumstantial evidence that lemaisa, this would, meaning I can hold up the klal, that kelim in general are considered to be torn in Yerushalayim, but it does, I could still also hold that kelim found on the way down to the mikvah will still be considered tamein. Abishol, hayakorin osat tzipora. So we'll say, the Gemara is just talking about over here that this, what the Mishnah called this meritza, this hammer, so different people called it different names. Abishol used to call it a tziporin. We'll say tziporin literally means like a nail, because apparently, again, it used to be like shaped like a long fingernail, and able to dig up the earth. Man damar tziporin, shedom le tziporin. So the man damar who called it a tziporin, because he said that the hammer itself resembled a nail. Man damar meritza, others called it a meritza. Then I will say meritza literally means like a crusher. A hammer or a crusher. Why? Shemeritza ha'evan lebeis akvaris, because you would use it to crush the stone in order to clear way for a grave. Kofitz. I will say, if you remember again, so the Mishnah spoke about this idea of the cleaver, and actually the last case of the Mishnah was that if you find the cleaver tied to a knife, then the cleaver has the same status of the knife. So the Gemara just points out over here, Tani hasakin kashurla harihi kimot harizu kamosa. Just the Gemara point is, there's another Mishnah, and the other Mishnah reads the opposite way, that if you have a knife tied to the cleaver, then what? Then the knife has the status of the cleaver. So the Mishnah wanted to say that in our Mishnah said the cleaver has the status of the knife. Another Mishnah says that the knife has the status of the cleaver. Okay, two different Mishnahs. Says the Mishnah, we will say another fascinating case. Paroches shenitma bavlata toma. We will say paroches is the curtain that hung in the Beis HaMikdash. If you remember again, there are multiple curtains, but the simplest one to visualize is the curtain between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Remember, there was a curtain that separated the Kodesh. So let's say that curtain, Shenitma beVlad HaTuma, that became Tama with a Vlad HaTuma. I will say, what's Vlad HaTuma? Vlad HaTuma is Rabbinic Tuma. It literally means the offspring of Tuma. It's Rabbinic Tuma. And I will say, what's an example of Rabbinic Tuma? If you take a look at the Karban Aida, he says, Shenaga b'mashkin t'meim. Shechacham gazal amash shematamik. So we'll say, for example, let's say again, you have liquid that came in contact with the sherets. So midaraisa, the sherets does not convey tuma to mashkin, but midrabanan it does. That's because, as the Karban Aida points out, there is one case of tumas mashkin, which is where a zav or a zava touches a mashke. In that case, the liquid does become tummy, just like the zav and zava. So in order to safeguard that principle, chazal, where goes there, general rabbinic tumah on any liquid that comes in contact with something tummy. So now let's say, again, the sheretz touches a liquid. The liquid touches the parochas. Liquid touches the parochas. Now the parochas is tummy with rabbinic tumah. So what do you do with it? This is amazing. So Gemara says, Matbilin osa bifnim. So we go ahead and you have to now immerse the parochas. So we take down the parochas. We'll see in Yuma, by the way, how exactly they did this process. We took down the parochas, and what? We immersed it in the mikvah. Now, there was a mikvah right inside of the Beis HaMikdash, what was called the Parva chamber. We'll see that in Yuma also. So they immersed it right in the mikvah inside the Beis HaMikdash. Umachnisin osamiyad. And immediately after immersing it, what do? We hang it right back up. Because also remember, although under normal circumstances, when an item becomes tummy, a person becomes tummy, you go to the mikvah, you have to wait until Herev Shemesh. You have to wait until that evening to become Tahar. That doesn't apply in this case of rabbinic tumah by the Beis HaMikdash. So we immerse it, hang it right back up. V'shenit meis b'avatumah. What happens, however, if the parochas becomes tameh with an avatumah? Let's say the parochas literally becomes somebody dies, and they're holding on to the parochas. So what happens in a case like that? We take it down, and we take it outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, also, what this means into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. And we tovel it there. B'shotchan osa b'chel, bless you. We spread it out in the chel. Now I will say the chel is the area right outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Remember again, we had a couple of days ago this thing called the sarug. The sarug was this fence that surrounded it. So outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there was like another courtyard. There was a courtyard in the Beis HaMikdash complex that's inside. And then when you actually exited the temple compound, there was another courtyard area. So they would hang out. They would hang or spread out the parochas in that area. Because also in this case, because the parochas became exposed to an avatoma, it did not become tahor until that night. So they spread it out there in order to leave it outside of the Beis HaMikdash until nightfall. Im ha'isa chadasha. If it was a new parochas that nobody had ever seen before, shotchin osa al gag ha'itztava, kedi shiir ha'amas malach tishina. What would they do? If it was a new parochas that nobody had ever seen before, then what would they do? They would spread it out on top of the itztava. Also, if you remember again, we had our itztava cases in Erevin. They used to have like rows of benches, roofed benches, in the area around the Beis HaMikdash. So if it was a new parochas that nobody ever saw before, they spread it out on top of these roofs, these roof benches, and people will be able to see it from all around Yerushalayim, in order that people should see the beautiful handiwork of the parochas. Reb Shimon Gamliel Mishum, Reb Shimon Ben Askan, parochas, ovya tefach, al shivim ushtayim nimim ne'ereges. The thickness of the parochas was a tefach, and it had to be made on 72 different looms. That's how large, 72 different looms. Watch this. Every strand of material for the parochas was made of 24 smaller strands. Arka mem amo, its length was 40 amos. Virachba chaf, and its width was 20 amos. Omishmonim ushtayim rivo haisenasis. And you know how much the cost to make the parochas was? 820,000 gold pieces. That's how much it actually cost to make. Also, what that means is that's between materials and labor. That was the amount of money it took to produce the parochas. And watch this. Ushtayim osim b'chol shana. And I will say they would make two new curtains each year. So just can imagine the massive amount of wealth that there was, obviously, in the Beis HaMikdash as well. So they made two new curtains each year. Ushlosh me'os kohanim abilanos. And I will say when they had to immerse the parochas, it was so heavy and so big that what? They needed 300 kohanim to participate, first of all, in the removal, in the immersion and the removal from the mikvah and the spreading out of the parochas. Amazing.
You can imagine that when they made more kohanim to lift it out, it would have been wet.
Yeah, I guess it was enough. Well, 300 is a lot of people. So the Gemara says the following. Ilu amar chut echad kafol. So I will say now the Gemara goes through, how do we know that each of the strings was made up of 24 different strings. Ilu amar chut. So if the Torah would have just used the word chut, chut would mean one. Kafel shtayim means two. Shazur, which means twisted, would mean three. Mashizar means six. So now that we have mashizar, and then what? Arba. So remember, there are four types of different fiber, right? There's tcheles, there's argamon, tolas, shani, and each meaning of each thread. So the Gemara says, therefore, we see mikan. So excuse me, arba mikan ha esrim va'arba. So we'll say that's ultimately where we get 24. So you have your four different items again twisted in six different ways. That gives us 24 different threads per strand. Tani shlosh mishtaim. Others say no. In fact, there were 32 different strands within each thread of the. This is for the parochas, for the curtain. Ilu amar chut. If it would have just said chut, chut is just one. Kafel shnayim shazur laarba mashazar l'shmona arba mikan. And I will say everybody's agreeing. You have four different types of materials that are being woven into this. Hot lasun train. That gives me 32. Tana. So we'll say all the just machlokas of how many individual. I'm using the word strands, if that's the right word. How many individual strands were in each thread of the parochas? Others say arba mishmona. Others say it was 48. Ilu amar chot. If it would have just said chot echot. Kafel shnayim. Kelia l'shlosha. Shazur l'shisha. Mashizar l'shneim asar. Arba'a mikan. We know that there are four different types of thread. What do you get from here? Mikan. Ha arba'im v'timnia. Fine. Kasav echot omer ma'aserokin. The cost of Echad Omer Ma'aseh Choshev. Now, I will say, interestingly enough, the Torah uses two different phrases. The Torah calls it a Ma'aseh Rokim. Now, I will say, again, we'll see, Rokim literally means embroiderer, versus Choshev, which means a designer. Now, I will say, if you take a look at the Kavanah Edo for just a moment, he says, Ma'aseh Rokim, Gabe Masach HaPesach Ksiv, the Gabe Parochas Ksiv Ma'aseh Choshev. So, I will say, by the curtain, by the entranceway to the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah calls it a Ma'aseh Rokim. Torah calls it the work of an embroiderer, but yet by the curtain of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it calls it a Ma'aseh Choshev, the work of a designer. What's there between the work of a designer and the work of an embroiderer? So listen to this, Rabbi Sain. Ma'aseh Rokim, Pirtzuf Echad, the work of an embroiderer. So he's able to make an image on one side. Ma'aseh Choshev, but a designer, Shtei Pirtzufos. Could what Rabbi Sain make two designs, the same design on both sides? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemiah, Chad Amar Ma'aseh Rokim Arimikam Va'arimikam. One said that an embroiderer is able to make, let's say, we'll say they were lions. So an embroiderer is able to make a lion on both sides. Because we'll say, obviously, you can imagine normally when you sew something, so what ends up happening? You make the image on one side, but on the other side, again, is you don't have that image. Either you have the threads coming out, or you have, again, a disheveled image. But again, Ma'aseh Rokim means you're able to make the image on both sides. Ma'aseh Choshev Arimikam V'chalakmikam. So we'll say, again, the embroiderer was so skilled that he was able to make the same image on both sides. The choshev was even more skilled at what? That on one side there could be an image and what? And on the other side, nothing. Totally blank. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Ma'aseh choshev mikan v'chalak mikan. The Charna Chamer said, Ma'aseh rokim, what's an embroiderer? Ari mikan v'chalak mikan. No, the embroiderer is the one who can make it. Well, an image on one side and blank on the other. The Ma'aseh choshev, ari mikan v'nesha mikan. And I will say, what was the Ma'aseh Choshev? What was the incredible work of the designer? He was able to make two different images. And I will say, that's how we pass it, by the way. The Rambam says in the halachos of the Beis HaMikdash that the way the curtain was arranged in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was that there were different images on both sides. I will say, so you'll see this, well, that's easy. Because what do? They took two different tapestries and put it together. No. This was one act of weaving, one act of sewing. And amazingly enough, they were able to create two distinct images on both sides. Again, on one side there was a lion, on the other side there was an eagle. B'shmonim ushtayim rivo haisanasis. So remember again, what did the Gemara say? The Mishnah said that the parochas itself cost 820,000 gold pieces. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bizna b'shem Rabbi Shmuel guzma. That's an exaggeration. It didn't cost it. What it's saying is, it was very, very, very expensive. So Gemara says, Taman taniyan pamim haya aleha kishlosh me'os kur. So the Gemara gives another example of other hyperbole. The Gemara says, for example, we learned elsewhere that sometimes there was up to 300 kor of ash on the top of the Beis HaMikdash, on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, there was never 300 kor of ash. Is an incredible amount of ash. There was never 300 kor of ash on on the top of the Beis Hamikdash, on the top of the Mizbeach, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Bo, Mishim Rabbi Shmuel Guzma. So also the Gemara is pointing out that there are sometimes that the Gemara employs a little bit of hyperbole to make the point. So the parochas literally cost 820,000 gold pieces? No. Was it very expensive? Absolutely yes. All right, then we'll see if we're going to stop over here. We'll say again, Daf Yomi tomorrow morning is at 7:45. We're going to do the Daf Yomi again before the Chumash, so 7:45 tomorrow, followed by the Chumash Shemir Zashem at 8:25. And we'll do the last piece of the Gemara Mir Zashem by the Siyum by Shalosh Shudas. 7:45 and Chumash Shemir.